CBS News Face the Nation in 60 seconds.
I'm Lex Friedman. I run my own business, so I know from experience, hiring new employees can be tough. Posting your job in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all the top job sites, and now you can. With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to 50-plus job sites, including Craigslist, LinkedIn, and Twitter, all with a single click. Find candidates in any industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll in to ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by over 200,000 businesses. And right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ. That's ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ. One more time, to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ.
I'm Bob Schieffer. Today on Face the Nation, Ferguson waits and Washington fumes. As a grand jury in Ferguson, Missouri, nears a decision on whether to issue an indictment in the death of Michael Brown, police are on alert and the community is tense. The latest from there, and the president of the NAACP, Cornell William Brooks. We'll get both sides in the wake of the president's decision to go it alone on immigration reform.
To those members of Congress who question my authority to make our immigration system work better, or question the wisdom of me acting where Congress has failed, I have one answer. Pass a bill.
The president has taken actions that he himself has said are those of a king or an emperor, not an American president.
We'll talk to the chairman of the House Homeland Security Committee, Mike McCaul, the Senate's number two Democrat, Dick Durbin of Illinois, and two Hispanic members of Congress, Republican Raul Labrador and Democrat Louis Gutierrez, plus our all-star panel of analysts. 60 years of news, because this is Face the Nation. And good morning again. We are starting today with a situation in Ferguson, Missouri, where there have been a handful of arrests in the last few days as the community awaits that grand jury action. Brown's father, many others, have appealed for calm and peaceful protests, but the community is very much on edge. Mark Strassman is outside the courthouse in Clayton, Missouri. Mark?
Well, Bob, for the last 3 months, this grand jury has been looking at police officer Darren Wilson and trying to decide whether he should be criminally charged for shooting Michael Brown on August 9th. The grand jury has been given a voluminous case. Essentially, it's as though a criminal case has been presented to them, and they have to decide, should he be charged with murder, should he be charged with voluntary or involuntary manslaughter, or should he not be charged at all? The stakes, of course, are enormous here. There's a great deal of apprehension throughout this community. Security has been ramped up over the last couple of days. The governor has declared a state of emergency. You have security barriers in all the potential hotspots where protesters might gather. And you also have an increased police presence. As a look around, you see police officers are guarding parking lots, guarding buildings, guarding this community, trying to give a sense of calm here. Everybody has pleaded for peace, from Attorney General Eric Holder to Michael Brown's parents. But depending what the grand jury decides, of course, anything could happen here. And that is what has put this community on edge.
Mark Strassman in Clayton, Missouri. Thanks, Mark. And joining me now in the studio, the president of the NAACP, Cornell Williams, William Brooks. Thank you so much for coming, Mr. Brooks. What do you think is going to happen once this grand jury announces its decision?
I believe that the citizens of Missouri and Ferguson and the country will respond in terms of a call for systemic change. In other words, Michael Brown's death is more than an individual tragedy. It feels like a generational assault for many young people. And so where we have the lowest crime rate in 20 years, we yet have a generation of young people who perceive themselves in the midst of a pandemic of police misconduct in terms of racial profiling. So the people are going to call for systemic responses, legislation passed, reforms in policing, police departments that are accountable and that engage the community and don't profile and prey upon the community.
Well, that's what we expect. The governor has already declared a state of emergency. They're preparing really for the worst, I would suppose. Are you concerned about that?
I'm very concerned. The governor's responded to this as though it were a security crisis as opposed to a social justice crisis. And so I believe that his actions with respect to the guard in the state of emergency are presumptuous as to the intent of the demonstrators, who are really young practitioners of democracy, and presumptuous with respect to what may happen. We can go into this expecting nonviolent civil disobedience. I believe that the governor should respond systemically in terms of what he's going to do, what he's going to call upon his state to do. The task force is a great start, but much more needs to be done.
Well, I mean, as you well know, I mean, this grand jury may well not return an indictment here. They may take no action. And what I'm hearing, it's going to be a very hard case for the prosecutors probably to prove. Are you concerned about if that happens, what the community, what the reaction of the community will be? Do you think it will be violent?
I am concerned. I am concerned because we have a prosecutor who had five complaints filed with the Justice Department concerning his police departments by the NAACP. He failed to take action. This was before Mike Brown. He then conducts a grand jury process where he essentially dumps evidence into the laps of the grand jury with little direction. So are we concerned? Yes. But we're more concerned about the failure of the grand jury to be given the kind of direction, as is typically the case. And we're concerned about a grieving family and an outraged community. We want justice for them first and foremost. But we want to prevent more Mike Browns. That's the issue here.
Well, are you urging people in the community not to commit violence here? Or are you saying to them, look, this is not going to help? In fact, it could hurt our cause? Or what are you telling?
Absolutely. The NAACP has always stood for civil disobedience, nonviolent protests. We've done that over the arc of our history, and we do so now. We're calling upon our members of the community, to respond to this decision in a nonviolent fashion. Everyone has a right to express their rights under the Constitution. In fact, we have an obligation. But we need to be clear here. There's an asymmetry of responsibility. The police have the greatest responsibility to keep peace and order and to behave in a fashion that encourages nonviolence, not to agitate the situation. So we believe that 99% of the demonstrators and protesters will be nonviolent. Certainly, the Justice Department and others are responding to the possibility of violence. And again, it's just a possibility.
There's a huge media presence there. Does it concern you that so much attention is being focused here, that this in fact could provoke something?
No, I believe the media, in many ways, helps because they're helping us focus on how to prevent future tragedies. I mean, consider this, Bob. Over 100 years ago, the NAACP, almost 100 years ago, stood for an anti-lynching law, which would prevent the kind of racial profiling that we see today. So the point being here is we've long stood against this kind of violence. We don't want violence. We don't want violent protests done in the name of a violent act. We don't want that.
All right. Well, let's hope that everything works out. We'll have an eye on it. Thank you so much, Mr.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you. We're going to turn now to the week's other big story, the president's decision to take executive action on immigration on Friday. He signed orders that protect 5 million of the 11 million immigrants here illegally from deportation and allows them work permits. They'll have to pay a registration fee and future taxes. To talk about this, we're going to talk first to Republican Mike McCaul. He's the chairman of the House Homeland Security Committee. He is in Austin this morning. Well, Mr. McCaul, what now? It seems to me that the president has drawn a line in the sand, or whatever you want to call it here. Is that going to help or hurt the situation?
I think it hurts the situation. It poisons the well. Going into a new Congress, the American people spoke in the elections, and one of the first things out of the box is he grants amnesty to 5 million people. And, you know, in your clip, he says that members of Congress question my legal authority to do this. So he himself said 22 times that he did not have the legal authority to do this. That's not how democracy works, he said. So I think this is a bit of a threat to our democracy. And Bob, regardless of where you stand on this issue, and I understand it's an emotional issue, but there's a right way to do this and a wrong way to do it. And I think the right way to do it is to work with Congress to get real results and solutions.
All right. Well, let's say he has said what he has said. So what will Republicans do? Are you planning on getting some legislation together and sending it to the White House? Or will you just try to block some people like Ted Cruz are saying, let's just hold up every nomination that he sends up to the Congress? Other people, I mean, there's even some talk, really not serious at this point, of maybe impeachment might be something to think about. What do you think Republicans ought to do next?
Well, I think the impeachment, listen, the constitutionality issue will be determined by the courts. I know there are various lawsuits. My state, now governor, attorney general, now governor, is filing a lawsuit against us. The courts will decide that issue. But I want to make one thing very clear. We are not going to shut the government down. But we are going to shut down this president and his actions as it pertains to granting amnesty to 5 million people. And so we are looking at various options on the table right now, including the power of the purse, things that we can do to stop this in the short term. In the long term, to your question, Bob, I think it's incumbent upon Republicans to come up with our own agenda, a positive, constructive agenda, which will lead, I believe, with my committee's bill, and that would be the border security bill. We have to get that security piece done to have intelligent immigration reform, and that's not being done right now. And lastly, the biggest concern I have is because of this talk of amnesty and reform, we're really inviting a whole other wave of illegal immigrants that we saw in 1986 when amnesty was granted. And also when DACA was that executive action, there is cause and effect. It did result in 60,000 children crossing the Rio Grande Valley sector in my state. So I think we want to do this methodically, smart, starting with border security and then looking at immigration reform measures.
Do you think anything can get done in this lame duck session, or will all this come next year?
I think the agenda comes next year. I think in the short term with the lame duck, we have to figure out how we're going to keep the government open and not shut it down, and at the same time deal with this executive action, which I think overwhelmingly the American people are rejecting because of the way it was done. Again, he circumvented the will of the American people, circumvented the Congress that has authority under the Constitution to make laws. His is to faithfully execute the laws, and I believe he's failed in that responsibility.
Is there unity yet among Republicans? I mean, I hear what you're saying this morning. You sound very much taking the position that John Boehner and Mitch McConnell, the leaders of the Congress and the Senate, are taking. But you know as well as I do, there are others in your party that have different ideas here. How close are you to getting, say, the Republicans and the House together on a unified plan?
Well, again, this has to be done sequentially. And I think the more confidence our members have in the security piece being done, because you can reform the laws, but as long as people continue to flood to come into the country, that's not very intelligent. We need a border security bill first to secure it, and then the immigration reform piece. I will tell you, yeah, we're going to have divisions in our conference, but I think most of us understand that we have now been given a mandate to govern, to pass things out of the Congress, to deal with the challenges that are out there. And this is one of the biggest challenges and probably most difficult ones to fix. But I think there are leaders in our conference who are willing to move forward to fix a broken system.
All right. Well, Mr. Chairman, thank you so much for being with us this morning. We're going to get the view from the other side of the aisle now, the number two Democrat in the Senate leadership, Dick Durbin of Illinois. Senator, you just heard the congressman. Why did the president take this tack?
He had no choice, Bob. I've listened to the Republican response to the president's executive action. It is clear that they can complain, they can threaten, they can talk about lawsuits, cutting off funding, shutting down the government in the extreme, even impeachment. But the real question is, can they govern? Can they govern? It's been 513 days since we sent the bipartisan Comprehensive Immigration Reform Bill from the Senate, which passed with 68 votes, to the House of Representatives. They've never called the bill. They've never had a hearing on the bill. They've never taken up any part of it. And now they complain because the president has stepped in and said, we need accountability when it comes to immigration. They have to step up and govern. You ask the key question. Do you, among the Republicans, and Mr. McCaul, do you, among the Republicans, have your act together? Do you know what you want? And at this point, it's not clear. Do they want to continue with the current broken-down system, which is de facto amnesty? Do they want to sponsor some sort of massive deportation? I hope not. Or do they want to work with us?
Let me just ask you this. Why, and I'm just asking, because I'd be interested in what your reaction to it. Why didn't the president talk about that bill and say, look, you guys have been saying you want to do something. Send me a bill up here. I'll either sign it or I'll veto it. Or maybe once you send it up here, I'll say there's a couple of things I don't like. Can you change this? Why didn't he do that instead of what they say, just sticking them in the eye with a stick?
Let me try to recall back in July when Speaker Boehner was promising the president he was going to send him a bill. And at that point, the president waited, as he said, strategic patience. Let's wait for the Republicans. Whatever they send me, I'll work with them. It never happened. And the president said, I have no choice. What he's stepping forward to do now is, I think, what most Americans want to see. We want to make sure that if you're living in this country undocumented and you've been a drug dealer or a gangbanger, you're gone. No ifs, ands, or buts. That's why the president put this criminal background check in. We want to make sure that those who are working here are paying taxes into our government, and we want to strengthen the border. The president wants to focus our resources to make sure we have even more security on the border, to make certain that we are deporting those who are truly a threat to our communities. When the Republicans talk about cutting the funding for the president's program, they're cutting funding for border enforcement and for deporting those who are dangerous to our country.
Let me just quote to you what some Republicans are saying to me. They're saying, look, he's not trying to get anything done here. What he's trying to do is force us into doing something like, you know, shutting down the government, which he thinks will hurt us and put Republicans in jeopardy for 2016. What would your explanation for that, or what would your answer to that?
I hope and I believe that the Republicans on Capitol Hill learned a lesson when Senator Ted Cruz of Texas shut down the government over the Affordable Care Act. It was a political disaster, which they should never repeat. What the president is doing is basically saying, I'm going to do what I can within my power to have accountability in immigration. And now it's your responsibility. And let me add, too, they have almost 20 days left this year to call the bipartisan bill from the Senate. They could do that instantly in the week after Thanksgiving. And I hope that they will. That will really be an opportunity to see if the will is there in the House to pass it.
What you talk about the leadership amongst the Republicans, and are they together? Are Democrats together here? We know that in the Senate, what was it? We know of at least five Democrats mm-hmm. that voted against Harry Reid. We know that Harry Reid's top aide is sitting here making disparaging statements about the president, blaming him for losing the midterms. How does the president get along with Democrats these days?
Very well. But I think there's a reality. In the states the president did not carry, some of the states where there were disastrous results just a few weeks ago, it's pretty clear that some Democrats are putting some distance between themselves and the president. That's not unusual in American politics. But I believe that there is an overwhelming majority within the Senate Democratic Caucus for what the president is doing. We stood up on a bipartisan basis and created a good bill to deal with immigration. We know now that the House has that same responsibility. And I think all Democratic senators stand behind the president in trying to make this a safer nation with this accountability, and also to make certain that those who are working here with a temporary work permit are going to pay their fair share.
Why do you think Democrats did so poorly in these midterm elections?
It's a variety of things. Historically, off-year elections are not kind to the president's party. Secondly, there isn't a lot of happiness with Washington, D.C. And as a consequence, a lot of people have given up on the thought that Washington can even improve their lives. I think that accounts for the fall off in turnout in many states. So I think we have to restore some hope and confidence.
Do you see anything changing?
I think it can. Your earlier guest from the NAACP talked about some of the issues facing us with race and crime. I'm working on a bill with Cory Booker, as well as Mike Lee and Rand Paul, and also Ted Cruz to deal with the smarter sentencing guidelines. There's an opportunity here, and I hope that we seize it to do some bipartisan activities to move this country forward.
Well, I think most people would say they hope you succeed in that.
I hope.
Thank you so much, Senator.
Thank you.
We'll be back in a minute.
Face the Nation after this short break.
Big data may be just another overused buzzword, but storing, sharing, protecting, and recovering big data is a big deal to companies, big or small. Barracuda Networks offers powerful, affordable, yet easy-to-implement solutions for data protection and disaster recovery, email archiving, file sharing, and e-signing, all designed to protect big data and simplify IT. For an online demo or to try any of our storage solutions risk-free for 30 days, visit barracuda.com/bigdata.
We're going to turn now to the intense negotiations happening in Vienna, where Secretary of State John Kerry and other world powers are negotiating with the government of Iran over that country's nuclear weapons program. Deadline for a new deal is Monday. So far, little progress has been reported. Now both sides are expecting there to be no deal. Margaret Brennan joins us now from Vienna. Margaret?
Well, Bob, the U.S. and other world powers are making what they think is a generous offer to Iran, which is they'll gradually lift sanctions if that country agrees to further slow its nuclear program. But Iran is rejecting that, at least so far. They want an immediate suspension of all sanctions, which badly damage their economy. And they haven't agreed to completely give up all of the components that could be used to build a weapon. Secretary Kerry and Iran's top negotiator met again today, and they have until midnight tomorrow to find some common ground.
So what happens if there's no deal by tomorrow, Mark?
Well, the most likely outcome is an extension of the current agreement, which was reached last November and temporarily freezes Iran's nuclear program in exchange for some sanctions relief. That would at least let the negotiators keep on talking, but it's hardly a victory. Iranian hardliners are likely to say that talking is a waste of time, and President Obama, who really wanted this as a major foreign policy win, is going to face increased pressure from the newly Republican-led Congress and skeptical Mideast allies like Israel and Saudi Arabia.
Well, thank you, Margaret, and let us know if that changes. We will be back in a minute with some personal thoughts. Several weeks ago, I noted that the recent election cost nearly $4 billion. And I posed the question, what did you, the voter, and the citizen get for that? My answer was, not much. Well, I've done a little more digging, and now I can answer another question. What did the politicians get? Well, it turns out, same answer, not much. For all the effort by all those experts who charge the candidates these astronomical sums for all these half-baked schemes to get out the vote, for all the commercials cranked out by the strategists who take a percentage of the money spent on TV commercials, for all of that, voter turnout may have been the lowest since World War II. Only 37% of the eligible voters thought what happened on Election Day was important enough to vote. That at a time when every poll shows a majority of Americans believe the country is on the wrong track. Republican turnout was low, but not as low as the Democrats, so they can legitimately call it a wave, and I take away nothing from their wins. But my sense is most Americans just felt a wave of disgust with the entire process. The only good news was learning the politicians got no more bang for their buck than the rest of us. Back in a minute.
Face the Nation after this short break.
I'm Lex Friedman. I run my own business, so I know from experience hiring new employees can be tough. Posting your job in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all the top job sites, and now you can. With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to 50-plus job sites, including Craigslist, LinkedIn, and Twitter, all with a single click. Find candidates in any industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll in to ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No juggling emails or calls to your office. quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by over 200,000 businesses. And right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ. That's ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ. One more time, to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ.
Welcome back to Face the Nation. Well, we're going to pick up on the discussion about the president's decisions on immigration reform, and we're joined by two Hispanic members of the House, Republican Royal Labrador. He joins us from Boise in his home state of Idaho, and in the studio, Illinois Democrat Louis Gutierrez. Congressman Labrador, it seems to me the president has put the ball in the Republican court. What do you think what he did or was illegal or legal, whatever you think about it, what are Republicans going to do about it, or just what are you going to do now?
Well, there's several things that we need to do. Number one, it was illegal for the president to do this. He has been saying it for the last 3 years that he did not have the authority to do it, and now he changed his mind. I think it's also unfortunate because right after the election, he looked into the camera and he disagreed that his policies were rejected. He looked into the camera and he told the American people that this election was about working together with Congress, specifically working together with the Republican Party. And this is what he does right after the election. So instead of uniting us like he promised 7 years ago that he was going to do, he's dividing the nation in every single area. But what we should do is a lot of different things. Number one, I think we should censure the president of the United States. I think it's unfortunate that he did this. I think we need to lay out clearly why this is unlawful. I think we need to pass a funding bill and separate Homeland Security from that funding bill. And I think we also should require the president of the United States to go through a comment period, just like we have to do for regulations under the Administrative Procedures Act. And finally, and I think this is the most important part, we can't take the bait from the Democrats. We can't say we're not going to do immigration reform. We need to tell the American people what we're for, and we need to show them the step-by-step approach that we have been doing in the House. It's unfortunate to hear the president and other Democrats say that we haven't done anything. We have passed legislation out of the House, and the Democrats have refused to work with us on that legislation.
Well, are you going to try to pass some sort of legislation during this lame duck, or are you going to let it go till next year?
You know, if it was my decision, I would start passing legislation. In fact, I asked our leadership to start passing legislation 2 weeks ago. I think we need to start with a border security bill. I think we need to show the American people that we're serious about border security. I think we can do something like we already passed out of the House of Representatives,
where we passed
high-tech immigration.
What did your leader say when you said we ought to do this? Did they give you any indication that they're going to?
I think we're going to start doing things. As you know, I serve on the House Judiciary Committee in the Immigration Subcommittee, and I think we're going to pass legislation. But it's not going to be the legislation that the president is asking for. We have rejected the legislation the president has been asking for. We as Republicans do not think you should give amnesty first and talk about security later, which is what the Senate bill did. We think security, border security, is foremost in our minds and in the minds of the American people. We need to do that first, and then we need to do a step-by-step approach where we reform the entire immigration system that is completely broken.
All right.
And we can then do what the American people want us to do.
All right. Well, let me go to Louis Gutierrez from the Democratic side of the aisle. So what's your response to that, and where do you think this
A couple of things.
Happen
surprise,
here?
Surprise, surprise. The president of the United States, I mean, to listen to my friend from Idaho, anybody would think that the president of the United States, when he gave the State of the Union address last January, kind of took the gavel away from the Speaker of the House after he finished his State of the Union address. He said to the nation, if you do not act, I will use the powers that I have as president of the United States to begin to fix the broken immigration system. He repeated that. Speaker Boehner called him at the end of June and said, Mr. President, notwithstanding all your good efforts, notwithstanding all my good efforts, the House will not act on immigration reform. And what did he say? I've called my cabinet together and I will act on the immigration thing. So it seems to me that the argument is now we're going to start legislating. Well, it's 23 months into the legislative session. They control the House of Representatives. They don't need a single vote from the Democrats. We could have been in conference right now. I am not saying to my friend Raul Labrador that they need, and he knows that I never said this. I said, let's pass a house bill. I just want to make sure, Bob, when they said no gay families, we didn't walk away from it. When they said there was no path to citizenship, we didn't walk away. When they said we needed to do it in parts and pieces, we didn't walk away. When we gave them 30,000 more Border Patrol agents, we found a way to finance that. I think the problem here, if you listen to Mr. McCall and you listen to my friend Raul Labrador, they mix things up. They want border security, border security, border security. Comprehensive immigration reform secures the border. You cannot secure the border until, because they keep talking about a border, but you know which border they're talking about, the border between Mexico and the United States. Let me suggest to the American people that there are other borders. It's called LAX. It's called Kennedy. It's called right here, Washington Dulles. It is called airports all over this country. Millions of undocumented workers are in the United States that came through those borders. If you want a bill and you truly want to secure our community, the president, Bob, was forced to act. Last, think about it a moment. They want to censure the president. The president has said, I'm inviting millions of people to come forward, go through a background check, a criminal background check, at their own expense, pay the taxes that they owe, go back and work, and raise their American citizen children, Bob. I think children are special, and they're special no matter what the immigration condition of the parents that they have.
Well, let me just ask you this. Some people are already saying that the president taking this action is just going to cause a flood of immigrants to come in now because they want to come in and get in on this deal.
You want to know something? Great question. Number one, let me say the following. There's no path to citizenship for the 5 million that the president is offering. They can't get a single benefit, welfare benefit from the government. They can pay all the taxes that you and I'm sure you feel better and I feel better that they're paying taxes. I'm sure you and I feel better that they've gone through a background check. Now we can put the resources on criminals. So what the president says, look, I want to go after felons. I want to go after criminals. I don't want to break up families and go after children. But let's suggest this. We're going to put more Border Patrol agents on the border because now they don't have to do as much interior enforcement. Actually, here's a good thing. Do you know that under the president's program, the Border Patrol is going to be able to go and get an increase in their pay? Why? Because commensurate with their new responsibility, they should get paid. The president was very clear in his message. He said, if you're a criminal in the United States, things just got worse for you because we're coming after you. Because guess who we're not going after? We're not going after kids. We're not going after families. We're not deporting 1,000 people every day who do not present a threat to America.
I know both of you come to this with considerable passion. Congressman Labrador, I'm going to let each of you 30 seconds tell me what is the most important thing that the American people need to know about this right now. You go first.
The most important thing they need to know is that we need to follow the law. If the president was enforcing the law, we wouldn't have the problem that we have right now at the border. We are going to have a flood of people coming to the border. I think it's the same thing that happened with the amnesty of 1986. It's the same thing that happened just a couple of years ago with the DACA decision, and I think that's unfortunate. And the last thing that we need to know is that we do need to pass immigration reform, and it has to be conservative immigration reform. The American people would like to do something about the 12 million people that are here, but the most important responsibility that we have as members of Congress is to protect both borders. I have the border at the north. Idaho, it has a border with Canada. And we're concerned about that border as well, not just the southern border.
All right.
I suggest to the American people, check the tape. It's the first time any border has ever been spoken about by a Republican that isn't the border between Mexico and the United States. No, that's a step in the right direction. So I say to the American people, my friend Raul Labrador wasted the last 23 months. They could have acted. We could be in conference right now passing a bill benefiting the American people. Bob, they have 180 days starting January 1st before the first person applies for a work permit under the president's executive authority. What I say to them, roll up your sleeves. You were sent to Washington to govern. You have a majority in the Senate. You have a majority in the House. And I am ready to sit down with my colleague and fix the problems that America is confronting.
All right. Well, I want to thank both of you.
Thank you.
And we'll be back in just a minute with our panel of analysts in a minute. And now for some analysis on all of this, we're going to turn to our panel. Susan Page is the Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today. Michael Gerson, columnist for the Washington Post. He was a speechwriter for President George W. Bush. David Ignatius is also a Washington Post columnist. Clarence Page is a columnist for the Chicago Tribune. He's the author of a new collection of columns, Culture Warrior, Reflections on Race, Politics, and Social Change. And last but not least, Mark Leibovich, the chief national correspondent for the New York Times Magazine. Well, I didn't know quite where to start, but I tell you, this, there was so much energy in this discussion about immigration. I've got to start there. Susan, what's going to happen here?
You know, I think that President Obama has done an amazing thing. I don't think this is part of some grand strategic plan, but I think he's really put Republicans on the spot. And you're hearing a different tone from the Republicans you interviewed this morning. No government shutdown, right? We don't want to take the bait and overreact. And maybe they'll actually sit down and work on immigration legislation. I think that's an amazing thing. And I think what we're hearing from Republicans reflects their concerns about how are they going to look at this moment and looking forward to 2016.
Well, Clarence, have Republicans come up with how they're going to react to this? We heard John Boehner right after the morning after the president's speech. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he talked about him being an imprint of king, but he didn't actually say what they planned to do.
No, he didn't. But what we do know is that House Republicans have been divided up until now on the immigration issue. What President Obama has done, it really is to pull them together, as he often does, in their mutual disdain for him. And he's left a great opening for them, because he has taken action on the parts of reform that Democrats like, which is bringing people out of the shadows and keeping families unified, and left the border security part, which Congressman Labrador just brought up, to the Republicans, which they will bring up now, and they will push back with legislation of their own, which calls for the stronger border security, et cetera, without disrupting too much the family unification and those types of issues that the Democrats really care about.
Mark, you're kind of become an expert on hypocrisy in Washington.
Wow.
After you wrote that book called Our Town and seeing beneath the surface, seeing things that may look one way and somehow turn out to be another. What is your sense of why the president chose to go this route?
Well, I think he's fed up. I mean, obviously, I think people look at the political calculus. I actually think, and from what people have told me inside or close to him, that he was upset that he didn't do anything before the election. I think he feels like he's been, not played, but I think that he does not like doing things that are so nakedly political. And I think the timing of that was seen that way, and I think he would probably admit to it now. I'm struck by the tone also in the Republicans, especially, you know, that we've seen in the last few days. I think what they're trying to do is let this play out in a non-grandstanding kind of way. That could be in a presidential context. You have someone like Ted Cruz or Rand Paul or some of the more conservative governors like Rick Perry or Bobby Jindal sort of taking this issue. But no, I mean, they have a strong legislative hand now, and I think that, I didn't think I'd say this a few months ago, but I actually think that something could actually work between the two parties at this point in a way that might not have before.
Do you think so, Mike?
Yeah, I think we're seeing that the leadership now has some leverage. We had a conference that was controlled by people who were extreme in the past. Right now, the leaders are in charge of their strategy. They're trying to determine what they do. They don't want to do much in the midterm. They'd rather wait until they have both houses of Congress. They do have a continuing resolution. They're going to have to do something in order to prevent something worse from being proposed. So they're, you know, casting around what that's going to be. But I think there's every likelihood that that Republicans will come back and, you know, pass something, try to put the president on the spot. That's, I think, what Jeb Bush would want. That's the approach that both disagrees with the executive order but embraces some type of comprehensive reform, which is what a Republican candidate in 2016 will have to do in order to maintain the viability of his party.
What do you think, David? I mean, you've been watching Washington for a long time, as I have. Do you see any chance that things are going to change around here?
I see a little more possibility of that after this morning's discussions. I, like Susan, I was struck by the two Republicans that you talked to, each saying they want legislation and talking about the parameters of it. We have a system that's broken, and it's broken and unable to deal with an issue, immigration, the public really cares about. The president acted unilaterally to deal with that. But he said, give me legislation. And we heard today the Republicans are going to give him legislation. Then that will start a process of bargaining where they'll send something up and he'll have to decide, can I accept this? Do I veto it? Do they have to come back with something closer to what I want to do? I mean, I hate to say it, but for a broken system, that may be the only way forward.
Well, I mean, it's not just the immigration system that's broken. It's our whole political system that's broken, I mean, as far as I'm concerned. And, I mean, the fact that Congress is in gridlock, it seems to me, is just a symptom of the real cause, and that's our whole political apparatus here is just sort of crashed, you know, as we saw in this election. I mean, 37% of the American people voted. That's the lowest voter turnout since World War II, as I just remarked a while ago. I was stunned when I found that out.
And that's alarming for our system to have so few people vote and have people have so little faith in our system. But not to be too Pollyannish about it, not only did you have some encouraging signs about immigration in the interview you did this morning, but there was talk also about a bipartisan effort on sentencing reform. You know, that's the kind of issue on which there is actually some bipartisan agreement. There's been no willingness to step forward on things that you might agree on. Maybe there is now. Maybe the incredible frustration that Americans have expressed, which is reflected in the fact that so many people didn't turn out to vote, maybe that is beginning to have some kind of effect here.
So do you all think that the midterms will actually have any impact on 2016? I hear people say, you know, midterms are midterms. They really don't affect what happens to you.
They're going to have an impact. Well, the landscape has already changed. President Obama's approach already, he's violated the Washington etiquette that says, you know, let's all patch things up after the midterm. No, he's going out there confrontationally provoking the system. And as we heard this morning, it may actually produce some legislation as a result. People like Ted Cruz and Dick Durbin, who normally don't work together on a lot of issues, are together on sentencing reform, have been for months. I've written about this. Hardly anybody's paid attention to it. But sentencing reform is an area where the right and the left are coming together. And we're going to see some kind of new trade deal now. Republicans will give President Obama more trade authority because they want the president to have that, even if it is Obama. And so I think we're going to see things change after this midterm.
Well, I think, first of all, if you look at the three leaders, I mean, Speaker Boehner, soon to be Majority Leader McConnell, and the president, in a way, they all have less to lose. The president, I mean, you could say, you know, he's behaving politically now, but he's not running again. I think he's internalized that to a point where we can sort of see that at work in his actions. McConnell's not going to be up for re-election for 4 years, and Speaker Boehner, you don't hear a lot about his position being precarious in his caucus anymore. So, look, I mean, these are all institutionalists, or at least McConnell and Boehner are institutionalists. They might be in much more of a position to deal on things like tax reform, immigration reform. So, you know, maybe we are being Pollyannish, but why not?
You know, you just wrote a big piece on Chris Christie. I take it he's running.
I think he is. Yeah, I think he is. He's doing everything he can. I mean, that would seem to be putting things in place. What he's not doing is talking about anything of any substance. I mean, I'm shocked that he has been completely silent on immigration reform, whereas Governor Kasich, Governor Bush, you know, two people who we might run against, have been pretty vocal, especially in taking a more moderate position. But yeah, he seems to be doing everything else politically that would suggest.
You know, I think Kasich is the dark horse here. I think he might. I think he might run and might do well.
Well, he's got Ohio. I mean, he's pretty well respected in the party, and he's, you know, look, he's had a great cycle, and so, you know, I think a lot of people are looking at him.
I think the serious money is still looking at Jeb Bush in the Republican
just what
donor
I was gonna ask
donor
you about.
Class, and he's, you know, making some signals that this is a possibility. He hasn't ruled it out. I think if he doesn't get in the race, there will be a serious look at the tier below him. And John Kasich is at the top of that tier. Blue-collar appeal, appeals to religious conservatives, won 25% of the African-American vote in Ohio in his reelect against an admittedly weak opponent, but it was a serious win. And this is the swingiest of the swing states. So I think that, you know, he would get serious consideration.
Being a native Ohioan from John Boehner's district, I would agree. And I've been saying Jeb Bush for last couple of years. If Jeb does not run, then the rest have to scramble toward the top. But the Tea Party is still out there, and that's what gets in the way of John Kasich, Jeb Bush, and other moderates.
You know, I did not think Jeb Bush was going to run myself until I went down and talked to his brother, George W. Bush, and who he says, well, it's 50-50. But I just sensed that the family is now beginning to think he is going to run.
Well, when I interviewed George W. Bush, as you did on his book, I said, it sounds like there's a family campaign to get him to run. And he said, yeah, I think there is. And I also wonder if the family would get out there as far as they have without thinking that Jeb Bush wants to be encouraged to get in this race.
We need to talk a little bit about what's going on in Vienna. It sounds from Margaret Brennan's report this morning, David, there's not going to be an agreement.
It does sound that way. 24 hours before a deadline, having covered labor negotiations, I'm always reluctant to say, that's it, it's over. You never know about the 11th hour, 59th minute. But right now, both sides do seem to be positioning themselves for an inability to reach a comprehensive agreement. And then the question is, will they seek to extend the bargaining agreement they have, perhaps pocketing the areas of agreement that have emerged over the last year and kind of setting those aside and saying, we've made enough progress in these areas that we're going to work on these areas where we're still fairly wide apart. I've been struck by the way in which the Iranians are trying to signal, this isn't our fault. We've been reasonable, as if they're getting ready for the day after and they don't want to be blamed.
And we are talking, of course, about how to find a way to put limits and stop Iran from
developing
the components for a nuclear weapon.
Stretch the time that Iran would require to build a nuclear weapon. That's been President Obama's goal.
The Israelis say they just should shut down everything, and they won't be satisfied with any kind of a deal unless they just said, everything stopped. Is that possible?
It's probably not realistically possible. It would have been possible 5 years ago, but a series of hurdles have been crossed by the Iranians in that time period. I think the danger, Bob, is that if an agreement is reached that allows Iran to enrich uranium and have this threshold capability, other nations in the region, starting with Saudi Arabia, will insist on the same thing. And then the nightmare of proliferation of nuclear technology in that whole region will accelerate. And that should scare everyone.
Would the Israelis allow that to happen? A bad deal, in their view?
I think there are a lot of Israelis I talk to who say an ugly deal that still leaves us safer than we would be without one, and that's the deal the U.S. is seeking, would be preferable to taking military action. The problem for the Israelis is they probably don't have the weapons to be able to take out the Iranian nuclear program. The United States does, so you'll see pressure on the U.S. to do the thing that Israel can't do.
If they launched it, they would want us
they
to
could
join
start
in.
They could start yeah. start a conflict. They probably couldn't finish it.
All right, we have to end it there. Thanks all of you for being here this morning. Today's guests were Congressman Michael McCaul, Luis Gutierrez, and Raul Labrador, and Senator Richard Durbin and NAACP President Cornell William Brooks. The executive producer of Face the Nation is Mary Hager. The senior producers are Rob Hendon and Jill Jackson. Broadcast was directed by Sue Ann Stocky Wayne. Face the Nation originates from CBS News in Washington. For more Face the Nation, we're online at facethenation.com, and you can follow Face the Nation, Bob Schieffer, and CBS Radio News on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.